This is KUNC's Colorado Edition. I'm Carly Huckles.
And I'm Erin O'Toole. One Colorado county is mixing two things that don't usually go together, suicide prevention and humor.
Did you know that men have feelings too? No, not just the hippies. All of us.
It's called Man Therapy, and it's taking a unique approach to reach the group least likely to seek help for mental health issues, men.
Then we take a look at Northern Colorado's regional airport and the new tech that they're sporting for air traffic control. Plus, the Colorado River's most important document has a math problem, but there's very little consensus on how to solve it.
It's all like shuffling chairs on the Titanic, right? The ship is sinking still. And if you shuffle all those chairs around and you make it look pretty, it's still not going to make any difference. Like, the boat is sinking.
We'll take a look at what it would take to fix this important compact.
And Howie Mofsovitz reviews the new Coen Brothers movie. But first, forest managers say nearly 3 million Colorado residents now live in areas that are vulnerable to wildfire. That's an increase of 45% over the last 5 years. These new figures mean roughly half the state's population lives in areas at least some level of wildfire risk. Kristen Garrison is with the Colorado State Forest Service. She says a lot of the growth is happening in areas not commonly associated with wildfire, like the flat grasslands of the Front Range and Eastern Plains.
When fires ignite in grass, if we have winds, they can move very, very quickly. We've seen actually urban issues in Highlands Ranch and Parker and open space areas where grasses have caught on fire and your typical urban homes have been exposed.
Besides more people moving into fire-prone areas, changes in land use and vegetation patterns are also contributing factors.
The people who oversee Colorado's road improvement budget have some gloomy predictions for drivers after voters rejected two transportation funding initiatives. KUNC's Scott Franz has more.
Transportation commissioners were hoping the state would get hundreds of millions of dollars to add new passing lanes on rural highways and improve I-70 in the mountains. But these projects and several others around the state will be postponed due to the election results. Commissioner Rocky Scott of El Paso County says it won't be long before drivers in Colorado Springs and other cities feel the effects.
For some of our major roads, we expect gridlock. We expect essentially failing intersections and failing major arterials within 5 years.
Commissioners also predict a funding shortfall will delay the expansion of the regional bus service known as Bustang. From the state capitol, I'm Scott Franz.
Last year in Colorado, more people died by suicide than in car crashes or from accidental drug overdoses. Most of the people who killed themselves were white men, and more than half used a firearm. Now a new campaign aims to reach this group before the point of crisis. For Guns in America, KUNC's Lee Patterson has that story from Colorado Springs.
There's beer and cheerleaders and loud music in the tailgate area before an Air Force football game.
Yeah, so we've got just a display table here at the outside Falcon Stadium in Colorado Springs.
This is Sergeant Jason Garrett with the El Paso County Sheriff's Office. He's buff and tattooed.
Some funny, catchy slogans on these stickers. Sometimes life gets foobarred. If something is foobarred, it is effed up.
The messages on the stickers and the beer koozies here are part of a campaign called Man Therapy, which mixes two things that don't usually go together: humor and suicide prevention. The goal, Sergeant Garrett says, is to normalize mental health care for men.
That's a challenge I think we as men in Western culture have, is being open and honest about what's going on inside of us and our feelings, and allowing ourselves to be vulnerable to those around us.
That, plus mental illness, isolation, poverty, drugs.
It's a witch's brew. It's this collection of factors that seem to just have this catastrophic effect in our area.
A guy named Michael Schoen stops by the table, checks out the stickers.
Oh, see, they've got "Don't holster your feelings." Sometimes life's dog takes a dump on your lawn. See, there you go.
And there's a lot more where that came from at mantherapy.org.
Did you know that men have feelings too? No, not just the hippies. All of us. Hello, I'm Dr. Rich Mahogany. Welcome to Man Therapy.
He's the star of the campaign. You can go to the website and watch a lot more videos of the fictitious doctor. You can take a 20-point head inspection, find therapists near you, watch testimonials from guys who have gotten help. Colorado's public health department launched Man Therapy in 2012. Other states, like Ohio, Arizona, Montana, use it too. The country of Australia licensed it. Now, Dr. Rich Mahogany is doing his thing all over El Paso County. He's on billboards, TV ads, on posters and bars and restaurants, at a shooting range. It's part of a year-long push there.
And so if your goal is, your ultimate goal is to reduce suicide.
Dr. Leon Kelly is the deputy chief medical examiner in El Paso County.
You cannot do that, realistically, of any significant degree, without doing something about middle-aged men killing themselves.
The area has a high suicide rate and high numbers. Between 2004 and 2017, more people died by suicide here than in any other Colorado county. Last year, 75% of the people who died this way were men. Kelly says the things that had been done before, like crisis call lines, it just wasn't enough. So they started looking at new campaigns.
And then when we got to Man Therapy, it was hilarious, and it was edgy, and it was a little bit profane.
Some of the decision makers were skeptical. After all, Man Therapy presents one particular macho type of manliness.
Most of the room didn't get it. They were like, I don't understand. This isn't even funny. I don't understand what this is. Everybody sees the world differently. That's the point. This right here is for men. And that, if that's what we're going to focus on, this is the way that we're going to reach them.
And so the big question is, does it work? The state collects user feedback and testimonials, but doesn't have hard data yet. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is funding a 4-year research study looking at the effectiveness of the program.
By using the manly techniques found in my office, you'll have tools you need to deal with the tough situations life sends your way. Like
real doctors and public health officials hope that this message from this unusual messenger will get through to the people who need it the most. For Guns in America, I'm Lee Patterson.
Guns in America is a new public media reporting project on the role of guns in American life. You can find more at KUNC.org.
Nearly everyone who relies on the Colorado River can agree on one thing. The foundational document that divvies up the water is flawed, but there's no consensus on how to fix it. Luke Runyon has more on whether the nearly century-old Colorado River Compact can or will ever be renegotiated.
Colorado was considered a swing state in the summer of 2008 when the late John McCain was running for president. Water issues are always top of mind for Western politicians. And that's why when Pueblo Chieftain reporter Charles Ashby got McCain on the phone, he asked him why Colorado voters should trust an Arizonan.
I thought that was relevant because he's downstream on the Colorado River, and Arizona and Nevada and California are big water users.
Because of population growth and dwindling water supplies, Senator McCain said he'd be in favor of renegotiating the Colorado River Compact.
And I knew immediately that was like no. And so I said to him, you sure you want to say that? Because that won't go over well up here.
McCain doubled down. After the interview, Ashby called a few other Colorado politicians to get their reaction. Prominent Democrats and Republicans agreed that McCain was out of line. One Democratic senator went so far as to say we'd be revisiting the compact over his dead body.
Then Governor Bill Ritter said to me after that story ran, he said, Charles, that story may have delivered the state to Obama.
McCain eventually walked back his comments after getting a thorough lashing in the press. With one sentence, he had touched a raw nerve in Western water politics.
A lot of it is just the word choice, renegotiation.
Doug Kenny is a water policy expert at the University of Colorado Boulder. He says the R word tends to inflame old tensions in the watershed between states in the upper basin, like Colorado, and those in the lower basin.
I think a lot of the parties think it's scary simply because it's a little scary to negotiate when not all the parties have the same political power.
7 U.S. states plus Mexico use the Colorado River, and there's broad consensus that the compact has a math problem. When it was signed in 1922, the agreement projected way more water than actually exists in the river. That created a huge imbalance between supply and demand that continues to today. Kenny says any talk of going back to the drawing board makes smaller states anxious.
you know, if you're in a state like Wyoming and you're sitting down at a negotiation table across from California, you know darn well that California, at any moment, if they wanted to, could just go to Congress and steamroll something through.
While scoffed at a decade ago, today Senator McCain's idea has support among some environmentalists, like Jen Pels with Wild Earth Guardians. The only way to fix the river's fundamental supply-demand problem, she says, is to go back to the beginning.
It's just like curing an illness, right? You have to get at the source.
Pels says the old agreements among the states to manage water in the West are just that. They're old and don't reflect modern realities, like climate change.
I think that is a huge problem, and I think that we don't want to have that conversation because it's hard.
Those problems are clearly on the minds of water managers now, as they negotiate new agreements to boost declining reservoirs and cut back on use in the watershed. Pels says the proposed drought contingency plans don't go far enough.
It's all like shuffling chairs on the Titanic, right? The ship is sinking still. And if you shuffle all those chairs around and you make it look pretty, it's still not going to make any difference. Like, the boat is sinking.
To ever get to a point where the Colorado River Compact was opened back up for renegotiation, you'd need the support of people like Wyoming State Engineer Pat Terrell. And right now, he is not interested.
No. I would never advocate going back to the compact.
Rather than renegotiate the document, he says water managers need to come up with new agreements that build on it and address some of the compact's bad math. But he says don't throw the whole thing out.
We have shown in the Colorado River Basin the ability to adapt, even in areas where the compact may feel constraining.
And it's that word, adaptation, that seems to be going over a lot better with Colorado River water managers than the dreaded R word. I'm Luke Runyon.
All right, settle in and get comfy.
Or turn up the knob on whatever exercise machinery you're using.
We have a lot of great stuff to share with you. Maybe it'll help your workout.
Or maybe it'll help you enjoy that cup of tea.
Yeah.
An army of cameras has popped up around Northern Colorado's regional airport, but it's not for security.
It's very austere. You would not necessarily think it was groundbreaking technological equipment being used for air traffic control.
We'll get a sneak peek inside the airport's new remote tower system in just a moment.
But before we get to that, here's a scary thought for you. Warmer winters could mean an uptick in violent crime rates. That's according to a new study from the University of Colorado Boulder that compares NOAA climate data with FBI statistics. KUNC's Desmond O'Boyle has more.
Similar studies on violent crime rates have been done before by economists, criminologists, and psychologists, but not climatologists. Ryan Harp is a PhD candidate at the University of Colorado Boulder and lead author of the study. He says what makes their research unique was they zoomed out and compared data from regions around the U.S. with monthly crime data.
Milder, more pleasant weather leads to more people leaving their homes, going out and about, and you're increasing the chances that a perpetrator and a victim will cross paths without a guardian present.
Data was examined on 16,000 cities across the U.S. Harp says the study did account for an overall decline in violent crime rates since the 1990s. The study was published in the journal GeoHealth. Desmond O'Boyle, KUNC.
Air traffic control towers are the heart of most major airports. From high in the sky, they offer an uninterrupted view of takeoffs and landings. But as one local airport expands, the tower is being replaced with new technology. KUNC's Matt Bloom has more.
Northern Colorado Regional, 3AEF, Whiskey's clear, runway 15.
From his view in air traffic control, Northern Colorado Regional Airport Director Jason Lacone can see every movement on the tarmac.
We've got single-engine aircraft mixed with 166 passenger jets.
But he isn't standing at the top of a tower like you're used to seeing at major airports. He's actually in a windowless ground-level room. He's looking at a wall of 13 flat screens projecting a seamless image of taxiing planes. It feels like we're inside of someone's home movie theater.
You can kind of see the primary runway there, how it angles out from basically screen number 3 all the way to screen number 9.
These days, there are more planes to keep track of. Until now, pilots just figured it out themselves. Now, air traffic controllers will orchestrate landings and takeoffs. Outside, on top of a thin white and orange pole, 17 cameras are huddled together in a tight circle facing out. It looks like an intense security setup, but it's actually feeding a 360-degree live view of the airfield to the indoor control room several hundred feet away.
It's very austere. You would not necessarily think it was groundbreaking technological equipment being used for air traffic control.
David Ulane is with the Colorado Department of Transportation. CDOT helped pay for the project. Ulane says he thinks it could help bring commercial air travel back to northern Colorado.
Allegiant Airlines left here, ceased service back in 2013, and one of the reasons they gave, in part, was the lack of air traffic control tower facilities.
While there aren't any formal plans to bring Allegiant back, he says it could be a good way to help offset growing road congestion.
It's a long and tough drive down I-25 to get to Denver International Airport if you want to catch a commercial airline flight. So if we can put in technology up here and the community wants to pursue commercial air service and you can get those people off the road on I-25 and 470 down to Denver International, less congestion, people waste less time in traffic, and it's better for everybody.
Back inside the air traffic building, a group of local pilots is waiting to get a glimpse at the new setup. Cindy Carter is among them.
It's very exciting because I think it might bring some opportunities to some of the smaller airports that they don't maybe have now.
Jason Lacone pops his head out of the control room and invites them inside.
I'd like to welcome everybody to the remote tower system. Mission control is what I'm calling it.
He tells them this is the future of regional airports across Colorado and the rest of the country. The remote system is cheaper to build than traditional towers, and if something breaks, staff can theoretically walk into a Walmart and buy replacement parts.
Other than the software, you know, this TV screen goes out, we, you know, go down the street and buy it at the local store, replace it.
He's also thinking long term. As the region's population rapidly grows, how can the airport keep up?
You know, the airport's no different than any of the other transportation infrastructure in northern Colorado. We're seeing a lot more use, a lot more demand, a lot more activity. You know, we are looking at this as a solution to be able to accommodate that growth and demand.
The remote tower is slated to go into active testing in March, pending approval from the Federal Aviation Administration. And there are other hurdles still to jump.
We just got doorknobs yesterday, so we're real excited about that.
In the control room, Lacone and the pilots gaze at the bright screens. Outside, members of the Colorado State University football team are walking up a set of stairs into a blue 737. The group watches as the plane taxis to the runway and takes off, flying west to play against the University of Nevada.
Well, next time we see them, they'll be back with a win, right?
They didn't win. They lost. 49-10. Matt Bloom, KUNC.
Air 454, Charlie's on the roll. We're in 115.
In a recent episode, we told you about the federal visa program that allows farmers to temporarily bring in workers from foreign countries, the H-2A. Now we're looking at another visa, the H-2B. That performs a similar function, but it allows companies to temporarily hire low-skilled workers from abroad. As KUNC's Esther Honig reports, Colorado receives more of these workers than almost any other state.
25-year-old Jose Gallegos Alvarez is mopping the floor of a Pilates studio at a private Colorado Springs country club. He's in the last few days of his 8-month H-2B visa. He'll return to Jalisco, Mexico this month, where his U.S. wage of $10.36 an hour goes a lot further.
Lo que se me dificultará es por cuestiones familiares.
What's hard, he says, is being away from his wife and two children, one of which was born while he was here. Gallegos Alvarez is one of the several thousand H-2B workers that came to Colorado this year. Only Virginia and Texas had more.
As the economy grows, so too has demand for these workers. This year, U.S. employers submitted nearly 200,000 requests for H-2B workers, more than double the annual cap of just 81,000 the government permits.
We're sitting here witnessing more and more jobs being produced that are labor intensive and no workforce to fill those positions.
Todd All is the owner of Labor Solutions in Northern Colorado. He helps employers apply for visa workers in seasonal industries like landscaping and hospitality. To qualify, a company must first advertise the position to U.S. workers. This year, All posted nearly 4,000 jobs that paid $13.50 an hour or more.
There was six applicants. Of those six applicants that applied, zero showed up for the first interview.
The H-2B visa is temporary. Workers typically return after several months, but can apply to stay in the country for up to 3 years. All says the program's mixed up in the nationwide debate over immigration.
They see an immigrant coming into the country, they're taking a job, they're working that job, and they feel, well, why isn't a U.S. worker doing that job? That's not the case.
For many businesses, he says this program is their last resort for a reliable and legal workforce.
This idea of a labor shortage is really a misconception.
Jeff Sachs admits he's no H-2B expert, but as an economist at the University of Colorado Boulder, he sees a textbook example of supply and demand.
So when employers complain about shortages, what they're really complaining about is not that they can't get any workers, it's that they can't get workers at what they're used to paying.
With unemployment so low, Zach says employers now have to compete for workers, and that typically means paying more and ultimately higher prices for consumers.
The thought is to get enough visa workers to help with both landscaping and the golf course.
Dan Hawkins oversees the 18-hole golf course at that same Colorado Springs Country Club.
Once mid-May hits is when we really start mowing.
This year, he requested 25 H-2B workers for landscaping, but didn't get any. Because of high demand, H-2B visas were awarded via a lottery. Then Congress, concerned about the impact on businesses, approved an additional 15,000 visas. But it came too late in the season for Hawkins.
Are we able to get people outside the program? We did this year, yep. Was it a struggle? It was a huge struggle.
His predicament is not unique, which is why many industries, including landscapers, have lobbied for Congress to increase the cap on H-2B.
Either lift it or raise it, because it just doesn't make any sense anymore with the way the economy is.
It's unclear if Congress will take up the issue in 2019. Hawkins says the club lost $5,000 preparing applications for the visa workers they never got. He says they'll wager that money again next year, if it means a chance at getting the workers they need.
Pues yo la vi imposible, ¿no? Decía, bueno, somos millones de habitantes, entonces para que nos toque la oportunidad.
With millions of workers and so few slots, worker Jose Gallegos Alvarez feels lucky that he was chosen for an H-2B visa. And while he hopes to return next year, it could all depend on whether his employer is chosen in another lottery. Esther Honig, KUNC.
The new movie, The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, comes from the minds of Joel and Ethan Coen, whose work includes Fargo and True Grit. For KUNC film critic Howie Moshevitz, who teaches film and television at CU Denver, the Coen brothers are masters of style, but sometimes it's just style.
The Ballad of Buster Scruggs opens on a hyper-realistic image of Monument Valley. It's the landscape of mesmerizing rock formations, where John Ford shot his great mythic westerns. Buster Scruggs himself, Tim Blake Nelson, rides decked out in a spanking clean white hat and white cowboy shirt as he strums his guitar and sings a rowdy, absurd ballad about the Old West. This isn't the actual Old West. That never existed. It isn't even the Old West of movies. It's a garish exaggeration of Western movies, which for Ethan and Joel Coen is a place of cartoonish violence and unrelenting sardonic killing. This world of the Coen brothers is a perpetual joke, where events are disfigured and characters mocked. It's a grand performance for us to laugh at, and because we are superior to those unfortunate beings on screen, we can see through it all. We are better and smarter than they are. The Coen brothers are immensely talented filmmakers. They can make gorgeous images full of poignancy and promise. but what they do with those images can also be a problem and a disappointment. The Ballad of Buster Scruggs tells six separate stories, all set in a distended, artificial Old West. One story even comes from the famed Jack London. The movie starts with a book. A hand turns a page past the table of contents to a lurid illustration of two men rising from a poker game and drawing their six guns. The dialogue reads, "You seen 'em, you play 'em," sneered the hard man. It's a classed-up version of Pulp, something like the work of Quentin Tarantino, but with a higher polish. Sometimes the Coens go for the bizarre. In the third story, Meal Ticket, an itinerant showman, Liam Neeson, travels to small towns in a horse-drawn wagon. His act sits a legless, armless man with a pale face and red-lined eyes on an impromptu stage, where he recites poetry, drama, and famous speeches to a few spectators standing in silence. It's a creepy sight, in the same way that the segment near Algodonas taunts you with disturbing jokes about a hanging from the one tree in a desolate wasteland, a blend of comedy and straight-out brutality. These episodes might make you think of Diane Arbus photographs of people who don't fit conventional definitions and assumptions about human life. But Arbus's images are unique, while the Coen brothers mostly put a twist on familiar clichés. It's nasty but safe, and it keeps you distant from those ridiculous characters on screen, instead of lost and unstable and unable to find yourself. The Girl Who Got Rattled has moments of stunning beauty. A wagon train makes its way across an enormous stretch of prairie. The off-white of the canvas wagon coverings and women walking in long blue dresses with full-length white aprons, all set against the beige landscape, opens you to all manner of possibility. But the Ballad of Buster Scruggs adds ironic twists at the end of the stories. The gal's more rattled than you thought. An old prospector isn't really dead. But the movie deals in juvenile irony. The ironic moment mostly comes with a bullet. It's like waking up in a kid's farce when you thought you were in a game for adults. For years, I've wondered what about the movies of the Coen brothers seems somehow off. I think that the Ballad of Buster Scruggs is finally a cheat. The film's so interesting to look at times so beautiful and so well-directed, that you get lulled into thinking there's something going on that counts. And then when the stories end with yet another bullet to the head, it's a shell game or a bad game of switcheroo. And you've been fooled because you'd banked on getting something that mattered for your money. For KUNC, I'm Howie Mofshevitz.
One last thing before we get out of here. The slopes have been opening up around the state and more snow has been falling. I know I've been super excited about that because I love cold weather.
And I just love looking at the snow on the mountains.
Yeah, you get a cup of hot cocoa, you look outside, seeing the snow on the mountains. It's a great thing.
We should get out of here and go do that.
Yeah.
The snow piling up in Colorado's high country is raising hopes that the region's long-term drought could be finished. But John Berggren with the environmental group Western Resource Advocates says it's way too soon to tell.
For us to consider ourselves out of a drought or recovered from a drought, you have to not just look at the snowpack, you have to look at our reservoir systems, how are we doing with storage, you have to look at our riparian ecosystems, how healthy are they, you have to look at municipalities and their water supplies.
Record dry and hot weather over the past year caused many of Colorado's reservoirs to drop. Colorado's current snowpack is right around average for this time of year, and long-term forecasts show the state likely to experience above-average precipitation and temperatures this winter. So let's all just take a second and think about snow.
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 We can do this. This has been Colorado Edition, made possible with support from our KUNC members. Thank you. Our show this week was produced by me, Erin O'Toole.
And me, Carly Huckles. News director Catherine Welch contributed to our show, along with editors Brian Larson and Ashley Jeffcoat, who also manages digital.
Our intro music is Remember Me by Colorado musician Kalatana. We also heard Broke for Free, Breakfast with Tiffany, Poddington Bear with Pives and Flarinet, End of an Hour by Art of Escapism.
Robbie Reverb with Bling Bong and Motorcat, Forest Robots with Follow the Towers to the Moon, Dr. Turtle, Dead from the Beginning, Alive till the End, and our outro music is Good Grief by Ryan Little.
If you like what you're hearing, make sure you don't miss an episode. Subscribe at KUNC.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
And join us next Sunday evening at 9 on KUNC.